Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Salon Nerds Podcast. We do reviews and recaps of your favorite TV shows. We are an inclusive recap show.
Yo, 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 it's the Salon Nerds. My name is Jeez, a.k.a. Watch the Need. I'm here, my boy, Jess.
We drop live episodes on YouTube on Sundays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. All episodes can also be found everywhere podcasts are found. Thank you to all our supporters. Please help us by subscribing and leaving a good review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Yo, 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 Salam Nerds! It's your boy Neebs, a.k.a. Watch With Neebs, and I'm here with my co-host Jeff, a.k.a. DJ WrestleMania!
You do realize I don't actually watch wrestling, right?
I don't either, but I'm into it now. We are now a wrestling podcast, bro. Vince McMahon is gone, and we are in it now. There's no guilt, there's no shame. We can watch wrestling all we want. Jazz, come back, Jazz. We have to introduce our guests.
Fine, I'll come back.
All right. So some of you guys might know him from a few episodes we've done. We've actually covered a lot of wrestling content, including the Iron Claw, which is the movie that came out a little while ago. Nuv the Poet, what's going on, bro? How are you?
What's going on? I'm doing well. How are y'all?
Yo, it's good to have you back, man. How has life been?
Life has been good, you know, all things considered. Being a wrestling fan is hard sometimes.
Yeah. We're definitely going to talk about some wrestling. But before we do that, I definitely want to introduce our other guest who has been on our show. We've done Wednesday Adam with her. We've done, what was the other one? Love is Blind, I believe.
Love is Blind. We did Love is Blind together.
Yes. Tasha has her own show. It's a big deal. I knew about it before I even had my own show, and she told me about it, and I think it was on Clubhouse when you told me about it a long time ago. And I love to support other people because they inspire me to go out there and do some stuff. And I want to introduce Natasha. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing really, really good, man. I am really interested and curious to talk about the next season of Shyam Ki Jai, which is your little TV show that you have going on. Tell us a little bit about how you came up with the idea for Shyam Ki Jai and how it came about.
Yeah, so I had previously actually started a media company. And so that's where I learned. So I don't have a background in media, right? I have a background in computer science. And this media company like forced me to learn production and lighting and sound and all of the things. And I would work with tech companies and highlight the women that work there. And with COVID hit, all of those budgets dried up, right? And so I was quarantined. I was stuck at home with all of this media equipment and a company that was essentially shut down. And I was like, okay, well, now what do I do? And I started watching a lot of TV again, like international movies. I started watching a lot of Pakistani dramas. And I was like, man, like Pakistanis have it bad in the media. Like our narratives suck.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So like if you watch like Western media, we're always the terrorist, right? But if you also watch like local media, like if you watch dramas or if you watch like even the news, right? Like all of the women like seem oppressed and all of the men are just these like toxic characters that are treating people unfairly, you know? And I was like, I don't agree with these narratives. Like it's not representative of me and representative of like the people that I know in my community, and I have to change it. So I basically ordered the Shyam Ki Jai set from like Amazon and I built it in my backyard. And I'm like, I'm literally just going to interview Pakistanis doing cool things.
That's like Tony Stark's built this in the box of scraps.
Yeah.
In his backyard.
Yep. Literally. I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going gonna bring them over. Everyone can connect over Shamkichai. Like, we all have, like, it's this universal thing. It's this feeling, it's this experience that we've all had. And I always had wonderful conversations over Shamkichai growing up. And what was crazy is, like, when I literally reached out to people on LinkedIn in California, and I was like, hey, I'm doing this thing. You're a cool Pakistani. Can I interview you? And everybody said yes, like, without a hesitation. And they were like, was there going to be chai and biscuits? And I was like, yes, there's going to be chai and biscuits. And so that's how the show got started. And I did 2 seasons, super, like, bootstrapped, like, super scrappy. A lot of the interviews were on Zoom. And then found out that most of my audience is in Pakistan. And so I just got back from filming, a whole season in Pakistan, and it was crazy. Like, I have a whole production team out there now, and I have, like, editors and a lighting person and a sound person. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm not doing this by myself anymore.
That's so, and so cool.
Yeah. So it was an amazing experience. So we have a new season coming up. So season 3 is coming up, and it's all about the 1947 partition of India and Pakistan.
Nice.
And so, we dive into that. So we did something really interesting. So we looked at it from different angles. So we're looking at the partition from an architecture angle, a food angle, a media angle, we have people coming on that really understood what it was like pre-partition, what life was like, and then talk about how it was influenced in partition. So even how the buildings were influenced and how the food got influenced, and then what ended up happening when everyone migrates over to, like, you know, India or Pakistan, or, you know, whatever these new, like, communities are like, and how is life then, right? And so that is, like, one set of interviews we did. And then there was, like, a whole other set where, like, the whole crew went to Wagah border, and there's these villages there where people migrated to, right? And they have their stories. Like, you know, some one lady we interviewed, she was like 13 years old during the partition, and she has a very, very good recollection of what happened. And so she moved from this village, near Delhi, all the way to that area near Wagah border. And she had, like, a 3-month journey, like, migrating over, because she stayed in refugee camps along the way, right? And then we interviewed a lot of locals that used to live there pre-partition, right? And then never ended up migrating. And so they knew of all of the families that lived there beforehand, right? And what was so beautiful is that, like, everyone lived together in peace, you know, like, there was no animosity between religions, right? And so you had, these people that lived there, they told us, like, oh, this was a Sikh person's house, and they used to be really good friends with, like, my grandfather, and that was a Hindu person's house. And there was, like, a bunch of, like, you know, whatever people that lived here, right? And you go through, like what life was like before, you know, all of this nonsense happened, and how everyone was, like, a united community, right? And how much the Muslims and the Hindus and the Sikhs of that area specifically did for that community, right? Like, they made wells, and they created, like, infrastructure, and they, like, helped build out resources, and how upset they were when the partition happened. So they gave this example of a Sikh guy who his family was the wealthiest family in that area, in that village, and they were the only family that had a radio at the time, right? That was a sign of wealth. And the summer before partition, and so a year before 1947 happened, so 1946, he had built, like, all of this infrastructure in the area. He had spent all this money on his own house, and he had built other things for the community. And when he heard that he had to go migrate, he literally slammed the radio and he broke it, because he was so angry, because he's like, I just invested so much money in, like, building this, like, village up, and now I have to walk up and just leave, right?
Wow.
And so it was just an incredible experience being out there.
That's crazy. I remember when we did our Miss Marvel episode, we did a bonus episode where we brought in Mariam, who is a psychologist who specializes in generational trauma for South Asians. And the stuff that she talked about was wild. She told us how trauma works. And then for some of the people, when they refer to being in India or India being Pakistan, they can't differentiate time, because trauma doesn't have a time. So when they talk about, like, India and Pakistan pre-partition, they talk about it as it just happened, because the trauma is built into them and they don't have a, like, recollection of it being so long ago. To them, it just happened. So it's really, really cool that you're going and finding these stories. I feel like these stories need to be told. They can't be lost in time. And I believe there is a website that has a collection of a lot of these stories. And it's really, really cool that you get to show some of these. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, it was just so amazing. I hadn't spent that much time in Lahore. So my family's from Karachi. And so I usually, have spent more time in Karachi. I do have family in Lahore as well. But I've always ever spent like maybe a week there. And so it was amazing to like be out there and film out there. It was interesting filming in the villages because they speak a dialect of Punjabi that I did not understand. Like this was not the Bollywood Punjabi that you hear, right? And so now I have this dynamic of interviewing like in a language where I don't even fully understand what the other person is saying, but there's this like, they're just going, right? And you don't want to interrupt them and you don't want to be like, oh, I need a translator, right? And so I think that was just like super interesting for me. And the website you're talking about, if it's like the Citizens Archive website, yeah, so we actually interviewed one of the program managers there. And so she has been with the Citizens Archive from 2016. And her interview was very interesting because I got her to paint me three pictures. I was like, paint a picture pre-partition, like take all of the stories and narratives that you've collected over the last 10 years and paint me a picture pre-partition, partition, and post-partition. And she like strings a storyline throughout like those three kind of pictures that she's painting.
I was going to ask you, so you talked about translator and stuff. Is this going to be mostly in English or is it going to be in like a different language? Like how are people going to understand it?
Yeah. So it's a mix of Urdu and English and Punjabi because like in the villages, everyone just spoke Punjabi and that was that. And then, in like some of the other people we interviewed, they were more comfortable having a hybrid language.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a suggestion, but like, you know, a lot of our audience isn't Desi or Muslim. They're actually people who are just interested in other cultures. Maybe put subtitles in there so that maybe they can understand. Cause I think this would be just as useful to people who aren't from our culture as it is to people who are, because when this Marvel came out and people were like, whoa, this is part of history. No one taught us this. We never heard about the partition. We didn't know what it was. We didn't know this many people died. I think it's just as important for other people to understand this as it is for us. And unfortunately, a lot of people in our diaspora don't speak the language anymore. Like I have nieces and nephews and they don't understand Urdu, Punjabi, and it's sad, but I still would want them to connect to the culture and the history.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's like the one thought that's been going on my mind. We're like in that, we're just starting editing. And so that's like one thing that keeps going on in my head where I'm like, I think we need subtitles because the Punjabi ones, honestly, like I had, after it was, the filming was over, I actually had the crew sit down and explain to me like, what does this mean? Because I didn't even understand it. And so I think we're definitely going to need like subtitles.
That's crazy. How many episodes do you have this season?
So we have 8 episodes. It'll be one episode a week. We're starting mid-Feb. So we're waiting for the Pakistani election to blow over whatever is going to happen with that.
What's the worst that could happen after that?
I mean, yeah, right. Then we're gonna get started. And so, you know, we'll have the trailer out hopefully this week. And then, you know, it's just going to be go, go, go after that. And so it's super interesting. Like everyone is so interesting. We have the chef from Dera Ismail Khan. Uh-huh. And he there was a whole Hindu Pathan community in Dera Ismail Khan pre-partition. Mm. I didn't even know there were Hindu Pathans, right?
No, I always thought
Pathans were like Muslim, but there was this whole Hindu Pathan community and they had this very specific vegetarian cuisine. And this guy's mother was one of the custodians of this vegetarian cuisine and she took it to Delhi when they were forced to migrate out of there. And this family had invested a lot in the Dera Ismail Khan community. So even today, you can go in that area and be like, take me to the Bagai Haveli and people will know, right? But once they migrated over, they realized they didn't actually have the ingredients that you need to make that food. It was very specific ingredients. So then a lot of members of those communities became Halvai. And that's how a lot of the Halvais in Delhi started, like the modern famous Halvais, right? And that's like, would have never guessed.
That's so interesting. I love hearing about that. That's really cool.
Yeah. So that's what I mean when I said we analyzed it from like the food angle and the architecture angle and the media angle. Like, this is the way that we're doing it. We're not just like recount, like we obviously have survivor stories, but we have all of these other like things that like you don't even think about when you're like, oh yeah, partition.
I think that's
exciting.
Yeah, that's a great balance because I agree. Like you have these survivor stories and they're important. They really are, but they can be a lot. They can definitely be a lot. And you don't want to watch a show that's going to make you feel sad for a full hour. So I love the fact that there's like things to celebrate too, like the culture and the food and the architecture. I find that really, really cool and how it was shared and how it was spread. I love that. It's such a great idea. What inspired you to do this?
Honestly, I think what's interesting is like Pakistan is one of the few countries in the world where you still actually have access to the generation that saw the start of the country, right? And the fact that we're losing those people, I think losing my grandparents, I've had all four of my grandparents until like I was 20, and then one after the other, you know, they started passing away, and you're like, oh my God, I never got a chance to sit down with them and learn like their history of like, they literally migrated over, right? And they built businesses and they started their life. And, you know, and here I like, don't get 5G. And I'm like, what is happening? Right? You know what I mean? And so I just like wanted to sort of connect to that. Right. And in that quest, I was like, oh my God, like there's all of these other things to uncover. And how can I talk about this in a holistic way, you know, where people can actually understand what life was like. Right. And so it's part of like just knowing about my own identity. Right. And where did it start from? And what does it mean?
That's so true. I never thought of it that way, because we do have a generation of people who were alive around all of this stuff happening. And I think because of all the trauma, like, you know, they didn't want to talk about it. We didn't want to ask them about it. And a lot of it was lost. And it's a tough conversation to have with someone like that. But I think it could be very healing to the country. It could be very healing to the people and the diaspora and the generations that come after it. The best way to prevent something like this to ever happen again is to really learn about it, right? And learn from it. So I appreciate that. That's really, really cool.
Yeah, thank you. So anyways, it'll be live in a couple weeks, inshallah. And so I'll let you guys know when it goes out. But, you know, watch it, share it, please. I think it's interesting. And so, yeah, for sure.
Please let me know. Feel free to tag me in it, and I will post it. If you want to do the collaboration thing, I'll be happy to share as much as you can. Guys, check it out. Shamki Chai, it's on Instagram. It's on YouTube. Where else are you guys available? Do you guys have a podcast too, or just that?
Just Instagram and YouTube. If I can get those right, I'll then think about getting another social media platform.
Yeah,
that's enough work.
Just focus on that. But that's really cool, man. I am so excited. February what? 8th or February, mid-February? I don't know when the elections are.
No, it's going to be like, so the elections are February 8th. And so it's going to be the week after.
The week after the elections, unless like they're the January 6th situation where they storm the Capitol or something.
Oh, God.
As long as they don't do that.
Honestly, I don't think it would face Pakistanis. They'd be like, whatever. Like, it's.
Yeah. I was just in Pakistan last year and they literally arrested Imran Khan while I was there. It was the wildest thing. And I was up in the mountains. So, like, the people in the mountains are so disconnected from like all the drama that's happening from the rest of Pakistan. They're just like chilling. They're like, what do we care? Like, we're just here doing our own thing. And like, you know, we're herding goats and we're, you know, doing our own education here. And they were just so unbothered. It was really, really funny. But once I got to Islamabad, like that whole place was shut down. We didn't know flights would let us leave. We were sleeping at the airport just so that we are guaranteed a seat. It was wild. It's a fun country, guys. It's unpredictable.
Honestly, you know what? At least you know, right? I feel like in America, so much is hidden. You have like no idea what could be going on. Like in Karachi, we're driving down the street and like I'm driving with my cousin and he's like, that's an army spy. That's an actual beggar. That person's pretending to be a beggar. Like everybody knows everything. You know, you're walking into it. You're like, I know exactly who you are and why you're here. you don't, I know if I'm being surveyed. Like I'm not shocked. I like know. you know? And so I think that's better than like living under the illusion of like freedom and democracy and then having your whole world fall apart, which is what I think America is about.
That's really cool. I really like the idea that we got this amazing content coming out and it's coming from Pakistan. We also have some cool content coming out, not directly from India, but there is a new movie coming out. It's called Monkey Man. Dev Patel is starring in it. He's directing it. Jordan Peele is producing it. I just watched this trailer and it looks insane. It looks so good. Jack, did you have a chance to see this?
You know what I'm going to say though, right?
What?
Like y'all know how, like what's coming with the trailer. It's that song.
Oh my god. Yes. Why that song? Nov, I know you have words. I know you definitely have words for that song. Please let it rip.
Okay. It's a great song, first of all. It's a great song.
It's a great song.
It's like 20 plus years now. Can we just retire it and get a new anthem? A new anthem, please. Like, I get it because there was all the collaborations and it's been played so people know it. So I get it. But it is for someone who is Punjabi and like hears it all the time. Like, I don't want to say I hate it because I don't, but it's not something I play. I don't know the last time I played that song on my Spotify.
Yeah.
Like, I've just heard it so many times that I'm just tired of it. And so to use it in this trailer, I was watching the trailer for the first time right before we went live, and you saw my reaction. I was just shaking my head. I'm like, what is this? I was enjoying the trailer. I was like, oh, this is really cool. And then it just starts playing. And I'm like, bro, it's 2024. Come on.
I know. It was a really good trailer, and even the music sounded good, but then you realize what the music actually is. And then you're like, wait a second, you got me.
I am hyped for Monkey Man. It looks really cool and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. Natasha, what about you? What are your thoughts?
I'm very excited for it. I plus one on the song stuff. Like they literally could have chosen anything. You know, whatever. But I think once like the West gets exposure to like Bollywood dramas and like the mafia dramas, not like soap operas, but like the mafia stuff that comes out, it's just gonna implode. Like it is so good. Like you look at some of these mafia movies, like what was the Amitabh Bachchan Godfather one that came out? Sarkar, the Sarkar trilogy. You have Rajneeti, you have Saif Ali Khan's like show on Prime. I forget the name, but it's also like a mafia family political like story. And so I think India does that very, very well.
Yeah, I think there's like I've had issues with India because I feel like in the last few years, a lot of their movies have been focusing on propaganda and nationalism and it's like to the point where like they've always done it. But it was like, hey, we had a good story and to go with it. And now it's like the story isn't even good. It's not even historically accurate. I think the movie came out Fighter, which I heard is terribly propaganda. They took the entire history, they switched it, it's not even a coherent story, and it's really surprising because it has big stars in it, but it's just blatant propaganda. And like if Bollywood could focus on more of these like gangster type movies, and I think it would do really, really well. But I'm kind of been over it for a while, and it was because like they weren't making like good content.
I think they tried to do something interesting with Tiger 3. I don't know if you guys saw that. They and I think Pathan did it too, where you have someone in like the ISI and then you have someone in RAW, and like you have good and bad people in both. And so it basically does this balance of like, you know, you kind of get good and bad in both countries and whatever, right? And you just try and be a good person, right? And I like that angle of it. And so the Khans are trying to do their best, but yeah, I have seen that like other movies have come out that aren't as nice. It's actually banned in the UAE.
So like because of that, I haven't really been keeping up with Bollywood and stuff like that. But this is a movie, takes place in India, but it isn't a Bollywood movie. What were you saying?
No, it's not. But what I'm saying, oh yeah, this might be interesting to you because the whole Pathaan and Tiger thing, they're trying to turn it into a like India Marvel thing.
Yeah,
so it's Yash Raj's espionage cinematic whatever studio. And Hrithik Roshan, spoiler alert, is like their next, like it seems like a villain. Yeah, but that's what it seemed like in the after credit scene. But they're totally doing the Marvel thing. I actually thought of you when I saw that. I was like, oh, I wonder if this will make it on the show.
Yeah. No. Well, speaking of Marvel, there's some cool Marvel news coming out, too. I think Spider-Man 4 has some rumors going on about it. They are thinking, now, I'm not a big fan of this idea, but Sony is pushing for Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire to come back for Spider-Man 4. But Kevin Feige and Tom Holland are like, no, we want a more grounded, local kind of story. What are your thoughts about that, Jazz?
y'all know, like, Andrew Garfield's my favorite Spider-Man.
Sure.
And like, I would love to see him, but I gotta agree with Feige and Holland here. Like, there's only so much nostalgia money printing you can do. And I feel like them bringing them back again after like No Way Home, which was incredible, by the way.
Yeah.
But like, we all know it's a total money grab. And so for them to keep doing it, like, I don't like that idea or like even possibly some story element behind it. Like, it just does not make sense story-wise. And then what? Like, are we just done? Like, I don't know where they're going to go with that. So, no, I don't like the idea, even though I would love to see Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man again.
I feel like we had to earn that. We took, 2 years of Andrew Garfield doing movies that didn't get good reception. Then he got fired. Tobey Maguire did 3 movies, and then the fourth one had issues, and they scrapped it. So, like, to have them here after so many years, it felt like we earned it, and it's, like, delayed gratification. If they do it, like, one right after the other, it kind of loses that. Nov, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, this is the first I'm hearing of those rumors, so I'm trying to also fully understand, like, they'd be in the movie together?
Yeah, it's a multiverse story, another multiverse story.
Yeah, no, see, I'm not for that. If they were doing, like, a solo story for one of them, that I think would work. You know, like, a lot of people were clamoring for Andrew Garfield to get another Spider-Man film after No Way Home. I'd be fine with that. I'd be fine with exploring Toby's Peter's story after, you know, like, where he is, especially where he is now in terms of, like, No Way Home. He's, like, this elder kind of like wise Peter,
and
Andrew kind of going through like his second angsty phase, it seems.
Second puberty. Yep.
Yeah, so the either of those stories are interesting to me, but I don't see the need to put them together. Like, to your point, I think if we got one of them solo and then another solo and then it came together again, I think that would be better, you know. And then you're also like making more money because you're doing more stories, but like just doing another multiverse story because multiverse is the thing right now, no, I'm not for it.
Yeah, we're seeing that everywhere, right? It's getting a little oversaturated with the multiverse.
This is the thing with Marvel, is like they did a really good job, but they also set this like precedent now where everybody, like, they started a cinematic universe. Everybody tried to do a cinematic universe, failed, but they tried it. You know, they started multiverse stuff. Now everybody's doing like superhero content. Multiverse content is the thing right now because people don't think about like what might attract audiences. They just saw what worked. So they're like, oh, let's just keep doing that thing.
Yeah.
But I was listening to this interview with the creators of Avatar, The Last Airbender. And what they said was really interesting because they were talking about when they were first working on the series. And they were saying, like, whatever the next SpongeBob is going to be, it's not going to be like SpongeBob. You already have SpongeBob. So you can't, like, replicate SpongeBob. You have to do something very different, which Avatar is, right? It's just a completely different narrative, character, everything. And so the same thing, like, you can't redo Avatar. You have to do something different again. So I think the same thing applies here. If you can't just keep doing superheroes, you got to do something different.
Yeah. It reminds me of like the tech companies where they're always like, is this going to be the Uber of pizza? This is going to be the Uber of this, right? Yeah. That's kind of what it reminds me of. Natasha, what are your thoughts?
Apple of weed or like, yeah. I hear all that bullshit.
I am so like confused with all of these different Spider-Man movies and where everybody is in the universe. And then the cartoon ones have come out and I'm like, how does that work? Because is like that the same one of the multi-universes or is it like a totally different one? And so I hope all of these storylines can like merge together into a cohesive thing. Because like at least for the other multiverses, they've like started and ended, like, you know, they've kind of closed that story up in a movie, right? And these kind of just feel like they're throwing darts at the wall to see what sticks with Spider-Man, because it had such a rough start. And they're just like trying to go with whatever might work. And now it's just way too confusing.
It is. And you don't even know the half of it, because like Sony has their own little universe that no one knows where it belongs, because there's no Spider-Man in this universe. There's Morbius, there's Kraven, there's Madame Web, which is coming out next like month. And then there is Venom, right? And we have no idea which Spider-Man belongs to this universe. And it's so confusing. And like the only reason people even watch any of these movies is to see where it connects. There's no reason to watch the movie. And Madame Web is so wild. So this is what's happening. They know this movie is not going to be good. So now they've rebranded the advertising. And the advertising, it's so unhinged. It's now promoting this movie like a sexy Spider-Man movie. Like they have all of the actresses talking on the screen like, this is going to be so hot, and they got like Sydney Sweeney in it, and they're showing her in their costumes, and they're showing them in like weird angles, and I'm like, oh no, they're going for the horny teenagers now. Like, what's going on? This is such bad marketing.
I remember seeing the promo for that. I was so confused. I'm like, what is this? Is this Spider-Man? Wait, this doesn't have a Marvel logo on it. Why would this be like that? I was very confused.
It is very confusing. So the storyline is Madame Web is this one particular spider. So yeah, someone says Sony loves fucking up good things. They do. Which is apparent, because when Sony's emails leaked, you got an idea of how dumb they are when you saw some of the emails leaked. I was like, there's no way this person has ever read a comic book in their life. It was bizarre. But yeah, so Madame Web is like this super all-knowing kind of like center nucleus of the multiverse a little bit, right? But this is her prequel story. This is before she became that person. So her mom was researching spiders in the Amazon before she died, which has now become a meme because it's such like exposition of like trying to explain the story in the trailer. And basically somebody comes back in time and tries to kill Peter Parker's parents so that Peter Parker is never born. So it's like a Terminator story kind of. And they're also starting to kill all these other women who are also going to become Spider Women. And I think like, Uncle Ben is in it, and it's bizarre.
It's unhinged.
And like the story is so confusing, and it's not going to make that much money in my opinion. But here's the kicker. The reason they make these movies is because Sony has a deal with Marvel that they have to keep making a Spider-Man movie every 5 years or they lose the IP. So the IP, because Marvel owns Spider-Man, but they lent it to Sony back when Marvel Studios wasn't a company. So the deal was they have to keep making a Spider-Man movie. All the rights will reserve back to Marvel, which is what happened with the Hulk. It's what happened with Iron Man. They lent out all of these like characters. And then if people never use them, they get them back. Then once they got them back, they made the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Then they bought it Fox. So they got that back together. So if Sony does not keep making these Spider-Man movies, they have to give the rights back to Marvel. So instead of making good Spider-Man movies every 5 years, they decided to use off-brand characters that are kind of like have some stories but are not super relevant to Spider-Man, and they're making movies about them. And the theory is they're going to do a Sinister Six and then reveal a Spider-Man. It doesn't seem like that's happening. It's really convoluted. It's really bad. The only thing they did right is the Across the Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse movie with Miles Morales, which is phenomenal. It is great. And I think the only reason it did such a good job is because they didn't believe in it. And they were like, whatever, it's a cartoon. You guys do whatever you want. We won't bother you. And it ended up being the greatest thing that they've ever done, which kind of goes to show you the more Sony Studios is involved, the shittier the project is.
Can't disagree with that.
Yeah. Oh, man. But speaking of Marvel, there is some good Marvel news too. There is Daredevil Born Again, which has wrapped filming, and they've actually showed, you know, clips from it. That looks pretty good. And Daredevil is one of probably the best Marvel show there is. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, Natasha, but it's a Netflix show before it got taken over by Disney. But it's a TVMA dark, gritty Daredevil TV show, and it's done phenomenally. It's really good. And now they're bringing it back. People are worried that they might have Disney-fied it a little bit, but no. I don't know.
I don't think
it's
they will.
It's the blind guy, right?
Yeah, the blind guy.
Yeah.
So
I think it'll be fine. Like, even Disney is putting like R-rated stuff on Disney Plus now. I think it'll be fine.
The only reason that got me a little iffy, because they promoted Echo as being TVMA and very rough, and I didn't find Echo that graphic, to be honest with you.
There was a lot of blood, dude.
I just didn't find it like Daredevil level graphic.
No, like the violence, I mean, I don't know. I feel like looking back, I feel like we noticed the violence a lot more. Mm. And now when we're seeing it, we're just like, oh, it's okay, right? I think we're just desensitized to it.
You think so? I don't know. We'll have to go back and see. Another Marvel news, Deadpool has finished filming, and that looks like it's going to be fun. My only issue with Deadpool is I feel like they're giving away too much in these leaks, because every day there's like a new thing leaking and you're seeing stuff, but they are going to have their first trailer during the Super Bowl, so that's going to be exciting.
Oh yeah, the Super Bowl's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens every now and then.
Right, yeah. It's in what, 2 weeks now? Yeah.
Yeah, it's 2 weeks. The Taylor Swift Bowl. You know, someone did a whatchamacallit? There's this TikTok. It is really funny. There's a guy who has all of Taylor Swift's concerts on a calendar, and he's like, Taylor Swift has a concert this day, this day, this day. The next day of her Eras tour is the Super Bowl. So her last day of her concert in Japan is the 10th. And they did the math to figure out if she gets on a jet at 12 a.m. after her 11 p.m. show ends, will she be able to make it to the Super Bowl on time? And people are trying to figure out if she can be at the Super Bowl after her concert.
I mean,
because yes. It's a 13-hour flight. From Tokyo,
but then you cross the dateline.
But she's going back in time, right?
Yeah, you go back in time, so she gets a day back. So she would literally have to travel back in time to make the Super Bowl, which she can do. If anyone can travel back in time for the Super Bowl, it's Taylor Swift.
Oh yeah, because like
she's not the halftime. Is she doing the halftime show?
No. She's just there to support her boyfriend. Is what they're
her boyfriend. Yeah.
And very likely the Chiefs win. I wouldn't be surprised if he proposes. Like.
You think so?
I totally see that coming, man.
People will lose their mind if he proposes at the Super Bowl.
For sure. Like, Carlos Correa did it when the Astros won the World Series. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Travis Kelce did that, like, the Super Bowl after winning it. Like, that's something he would totally do.
People are taking bets on whether they will kiss on TV.
Oh, that will for sure happen.
If they win.
At the very least.
I think if they win. What if they lose?
That'll still happen.
It'll happen either way, right?
Let's take bets right now, guys. Who thinks that they're gonna kiss on TV at the Super Bowl? Jazz, you're saying yes. I say no. Mm-hmm. I say no.
Natasha? I would say yes. I agree with. There's just too much money in that for them to say no to it.
Exactly. All right, enough. What are your thoughts?
I'm just gonna say no because I don't care. So I'm just gonna say no. Do not care. I don't watch football.
Do you guys remember the Shawn Mendes and Camila Cabello, whatever? I totally butchered her name. Whatever. When Senorita came out and they started dating, and then they did this like sexy song thing, and they just kissed and didn't. Right. Yeah. And then the next day, it's like everywhere. They're like kissing everywhere. They're like kissing at the restaurant. They're kissing at the IHOP. They're kissing waiting in line at the airport. Yeah. It's like, you're like, what the heck?
If I recall correctly, people were making fun of the way they were kissing. So they were kissing like everywhere just to make up for it. Oh, man. That was funny. Yeah, I do remember that. That's funny.
I think there's just too much money in them kissing. And so I think.
Right. Yeah. It's going to happen. So I totally see that. All right. But Can't wait to see that. Taylor Swift's going to fly up the show and make it.
Yeah. I just have to say, this sounds like the way I talk with my friends about things that may happen in wrestling. Like,
yes, like CM Punk and the American Nightmare will kiss at the end.
So a perfect example, very similar, is it was like 4 or 5 years ago, John Cena had a match with his girlfriend at the time, Nikki Bella.
And
another couple, the Miz and Maurice, who are married in real life. And so they won the match, and then he proposed to her at WrestleMania in the middle of the ring.
Oh, yeah.
Only to not actually marry her, but, you know.
Details. Don't worry about that.
she dumped him, right? Or he dumped her? Like I think he wanted kids, or she didn't, or vice versa.
No, she wanted kids. He didn't.
Yeah.
Which he made very clear, but then he still stayed with her, and they stayed. It made no sense, dude.
It was weird. I remember John Cena went on some, like, TV show, like The View, and, like, cried about, like, the relationship not working out. And like you couldn't see him, but I'm sure he was crying.
like people were discussing, like, oh, we were literally saying, like, he's definitely gonna propose to her after the match. He's gonna win and propose to her. They're gonna waste that whole time just to, so this whole conversation sounded exactly like that.
That's the way. Well, speaking of wrestling, it's a great way to segue into the Royal Rumble. Now, I haven't watched wrestling since like 2002. Like, it's Attitude Era was me. And then after a little while after that, I was studying electrical engineering. I was like, I don't have time to watch live television. This is crazy. And I kind of fell off. And then, you know, I would keep track of a little bit. Like, I love these like legacy characters because like I know their parents and stuff like that.
Sure.
So it's fun to watch. But I watched the Royal Rumble for the first time in like, I don't know how many years. And I am so impressed with the talent the women have shown, because when I was in wrestling, they were just using women to exploit the shit out of them. Yeah. Like, they were literally hoes. Like, and I'm not saying that to be like calling that. Like, there was a character called The Godfather. And he literally would have hoes.
A train of hoes.
Yeah. And he would traffic them to people that he didn't want to fight or something like that. He would be like, hey, you can either fight me or you can take one of my hoes. And he could, they would do this so young. And it's so, like, it was so bizarre. But now things have come out that Vince McMahon, the owner of the company, the CEO, the guy who made wrestling what it is, was literally trafficking people. That's insane.
Yeah. So the thing is,
I feel like no one's surprised here. Like,
this is the thing. There's been allegations against Vince for decades. There have been stories, there have been accounts, you know, for decades, and it's just never been like taken seriously by the greater, like, you know, company, by people in higher ups and stuff like that. I hate saying it's not surprising, but like the level and the depravity is shocking. Like, I haven't read the full, 'cause it's like 67 pages, but I've read a lot of people's reports of the whole lawsuit, and like, it is heinous. There's not even a correct word, like a good enough word for his behavior and what he did. So, but like, depraved, heinous, atrocious, again, doesn't even come close to it. So, but knowing that, like, these things have existed, these allegations of various kinds have existed, and also seeing the stuff he has done on screen, he's done on screen, and things that also have been pitched by him as storyline and rejected, it's like it all kind of just, it's like, well, we saw, like, it's just it's a weird, you know.
I agree. There was a storyline that he was going to traffic his own daughter, and that storyline got rejected by her, and I was like,
Neebs, there was a storyline he pitched of being the father of his daughter's child.
Oh
yes. And then when that was rejected, he suggested his son be the father of his daughter's child.
No,
nasty.
Just go like, oh, okay, not me, sorry, that's too much. What, just my son? Go, what is wrong with you, dude?
This man is insane.
He spent what, like $14.6 million in like hush money, right? Yeah. That was like one of, right? That's wild. And nobody did anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's.
So my question for the group is how, like, I think that like in these, especially in situations like this, the community that enables this also needs to be held accountable, not just that person.
Oh yeah. Right?
And like, there's zero accountability for that. You know, like even if you look at the way John Cena or The Rock spoke about him, they were like, oh yeah. John Cena was like, oh yeah, people make mistakes. Like they have bad decisions. Sometimes they make bad decisions. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
No, this like, is not, this is not a mistake. This is a Thanos level threat.
Yeah. It's, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, I mean, I was just going to say, it's just unfortunate where like, you know, the focus goes on this one person and the whole entire like ecosystem of people that allowed for this just like walk away as if like nothing happened, right? Yeah. And it's just very upsetting.
There seems to be a lot of, I don't know, revisionist history or something like that, because there are a lot of accounts coming out saying his son knew of this and that's why he left the company back in the 2000s. And there's a lot of things, like there's a lot of people who didn't like what was happening and they kind of left. And I don't know if they're trying to save their name now and going back and trying to do it, or these people actually left because of those reasons. I guess we'll never know, but it's unhinged for someone to have these kind of crazy storylines and then be doing a lot of this stuff. And the text messages that like were leaked, I was like, this man is disgusting. Yeah. This man is like one of the worst human beings on this planet.
So there's a lot of conversation within the wrestling fandom right now of like, say exactly what you said, Natasha, of like, it couldn't have just been him, especially because the lawsuit even states that, or alleges, just to be, you know, safe and everything, he alleges that he had shared this information or photos and videos with other people and things like that. So like, how is it possible that other executives or other higher ups or people close to him had no clue or nothing? It's possible. I don't know, you know, but like, there's a lot of conversation about, because the company was bought like last year, 2022 actually, TKO, it got WWE and UFC. So it is under like a different management than it has ever been. It's always been under Vince McMahon's rule, and before that his father, but now in the last year and a half or whatever it's been, it's under different management. So we're all kind of like waiting to see how do they handle this, because it's, you know, before it was just him. So if things came up, he could just be like, whatever, like, you know, he could easily just hand wave it away. But now like he was fired, he was forced to resign, fired, whatever, much quicker than people anticipated he would. He was, you know, Slim Jim pulled their sponsorship or paused it, and then he resigned, he got fired, whatever, on Friday, and then they resumed it because like, so they weren't expecting for it to move that quickly. But clearly the people in charge, Nick Khan and the other like direct board of directors, they recognize that like they have to move swiftly on this thing, thankfully, you know. So we're all just waiting to see like if there's going to be further investigation on like other people. As you said, other people had to have known something, like there's got to be some indication. Yeah. And especially people close to him, like any of the top stars in the past like 20-30 years tended to have good relationships. That's why they talk so positively about him. John Cena, The Rock, because they had a good relationship with him. So were they just completely in the dark by chance? I don't know. Probably not. Seems a little sketch.
Yeah. And the thing is, like,
I wouldn't be.
Oh, go ahead, Natasha. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I wouldn't be surprised if he knew this was coming and allowed for the sale of the company beforehand. Because, like, a lawsuit like this does not just drop on your head one day, right? Yeah. Like, there must have been, like, things, lawyer things happening, like, well, like a year ago, right? Yeah. And he's like, how do I save this brand and all of this money that it's built up over this time? And this is probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, because even if he's not on the board, I'm sure he has stocks in the company. And whether he's in jail or not, he still has those stocks.
It doesn't matter.
100% owner or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's protecting those stocks and stuff like that. But we were speaking of The Rock. The Rock is actually now on the board of this company now. So I don't know. We'll see. I feel like they do need to clean house. One of the persons that I feel like is probably the one that nobody wants to talk about is Triple H, who is part of the creative team, but also his son. Sure. He's here's the thing though, like he's his son-in-law. So is he like too close to know, or like would you really want someone who's married to your daughter knowing this stuff about you?
So there's a lot of speculation because so when Vince first resigned, he resigned like 2 years ago, I think it was.
Yeah.
And Stephanie took over, his daughter took over, yeah. You know, and then shortly after she took a leave and he came back. And so there's a lot of speculation that they don't have a good relationship, Triple H and Stephanie and Vince.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like there's no information on what their lives and their relationships are like.
It's like Succession. It's like an episode of Succession.
Yeah. You know, and like, because yeah, before Shane left, his son left, it was expected he would take over, right? But then Shane left to do his own thing. And then Triple H kind of started being groomed or, you know, set up to be the you know, heir to the throne. And like, he was running their developmental program for many years. But what's interesting is when you see how Triple H ran the developmental program and how Vince ran his shows, very different. And it was clear that there was, or at least it seems evident that there was, you know, a lot of tension between the two in like creative even. So who knows how much tension there was personally, like, but it really is like a drama. It's like, but we don't know. There's no, like, they don't do interviews and tell everybody everything. So we're just going off of like, oh, we see how he treated this one wrestler versus how Triple H treated this wrestler. Like, it's different. So we're all speculating. We have no clue.
We really don't. But like, if you go back and you watch this show, I believe it's on Hulu, and I believe it's also on Pika. It's called The Dark Side of the Ring. They talk about some of the really dark stories that happen in wrestling. And like, there was this one woman, her name was Sunny. She had some really dark stuff happen to her. China, I think, like, that's another person that we know, had some really bad stuff happen to her. There is some really dark side of wrestling. Yeah. And when you're a kid, you're there and you're watching these people and you're thinking they're like these amazing, heroic, superhero type the characters, and then you grow up and you find out that like majority of them were pretty terrible, from like the Ultimate Warrior to Hulk Hogan. They were all pretty terrible people.
Yeah. And like, something you were kind of touching upon before was the way women are, the talent are actually like used in the company now. And that's been a huge thing by Triple H. So I'm not saying this to like say, oh, he's not implicated in anything, but I'm just saying there has been a shift in the company's efforts to move away from all that and clean up their act, you know, like, cause yeah, the women were the way Vince literally on screen interacted with women.
Like, it was just so bad.
Yeah. So to go from that and being a fan of the overall product, not that specifically, but just overall, and seeing that shift of like women getting the main event of WrestleManias and big shows now, and like being taken seriously for their talent and not just because they're attractive. It's been a long journey and it's been great to see, but yeah, like, I don't know who's left in the regime that is still with that energy, that mentality. It's
But to go back to the women of the Royal Rumble, I swear to God, I'm not even trying to say this just to say it, but like, the women's Royal Rumble was better than the men's Royal Rumble. Like, I thought it was so good. I don't even know any of these characters, but they are like, the women characters are so creative and they have so much personality and they have these amazing costumes and they have this makeup. And then, yeah, sure, there were a few like botched moves that like we saw, but like, I didn't know who was going to win. I had no idea. I was really surprised. I didn't know. Like, there was this scene where they had these like two incredibly like strong black women just bench press women.
And it was
in the air.
Cargill and Bianca Belair. Yeah. Phenomenal.
And I was just like, this is so cool. And the way a lot of these women fell and like almost got out of the ring. And then I watched the men's, and yeah, there's a lot more talent there, but the story seemed a little bit more predictable. And I was not surprised about anything that was happening. Whereas like the women Royal Rumble had me like on edge. Like, I had no idea what was going to happen in that one. So like, they've come such a long way.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. This is like one of the positives of being a fan is I've seen the actual evolution of the women's division. And so like in 2015, I went to this one show, you know, again, Triple H was running these developmental shows, but they started getting really popular. and started getting their own pay-per-views, like their own special shows. So they did a show in Brooklyn 1 year in 2015. And one of the main, you know, events was these two women fighting for the title. And it was just like, that was like the turning point for women's wrestling in the WWE. Because other companies have been doing women's, there's like all women's wrestling companies as well. So it's not like this is the only company, but WWE is the professional wrestling company. So if you don't see it there, most people don't know.
It started with GLOW, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, back from the 80s. Yeah, I remember that.
And so seeing like them go from there to now like getting to do this, and like actually the woman who won the Rumble last night, Bayley, she was one of the participants in that match in 2015 that I saw live. And it's like one of my favorite matches ever, just like period in history.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And so, yeah, seeing the way they've been allowed to really develop as talent and as personalities and characters, like you said, one of my favorite things is when they come out, like you can see differences in everybody, right? Like a lot of the men, they kind of just, they can blend. They can kind of just,
you know, there's like 5 or like 10 guys who just wear black trunks and just are really built. And I'm just like, okay, there's no difference between you and everybody else. And they have like a regular normal name.
Yeah. But yeah, the women have tend to have like a bit more difference in their attire, in their personalities and characters. And unfortunately, there's still a lot way to go in terms of like giving them time on screen and giving them focus. But there's, again, there's been a lot of progress, and it's one of the things that's like really like I love talking about it, because I know what the stigma and the view and the perception of women are in wrestling, and what it, and understandably so, because it's been that way for so long. But I love talking about like, well, look how we're where we are now, where 5 years ago the women main evented WrestleMania, like Ronda Rousey, Charlotte Flair, Becky Lynch, all they were the last match WrestleMania. I saw it live too. It's fantastic.
That's crazy. That is awesome. Honestly, I feel like the Women's Royal Rumble should have main evented, because it was really, really good. Another surprise is that Logan Paul has joined the wrestling industry, and Logan Paul is a wrestler and an actually good one. That came out of nowhere. I mean, I've seen his match with Ricochet, and that was a great match. But he is a U.S. title holder, and he is a very athletic person. Like, there's no denying that. I hate the fact that I have to give him props. He is actually a good wrestler.
You and me both, man. You and me both. I was telling this to my friend that I was talking today. I was like, I don't care for him. I don't like him, but I have to give him credit. Like, he has put in the work. He's super athletic. He's picked up on wrestling. He's not perfect. He's still rough around the edges, but he's only had 6 matches maybe in like almost two years he's actually been part of the WWE. And like one of those was at WrestleMania last year, and it was against their top guy, Seth Rollins. And that is a statement. Like, if you can compete with the top guy and do well, that's a stamp of approval for you. That's how like wrestling works a lot of the time. They like test you by putting you up against one of the best. And if you can hang, like they would do that with The Undertaker a lot. They take some newer guys, or, you know, like John Cena, he feuded with The Undertaker early on and he did well. And he proved that he could go in the ring. And so it was like, okay, this guy has what it takes to be, you know, a champion, to be a main event guy. So Logan Paul has proven himself many times now. And I hate saying it too, but it's the truth.
It's the fact that he is like, by like, he has legions and legions of fans. So like, definitely WWE wants to tap into that, but he has legions and legions of haters too. And they are also able to tap into that because they made him a villain. So it makes sense to like root against him, which is such a smart, and he's so smug that like, it's hard not to hate him. He does such a good job, but he takes punishment. And I'm like, I gotta give him credit. Like, this man's bleeding. His chest is completely like ripped open. I thought he got my respect. I thought that was really, really cool.
I mean, it's been another thing that's been cool to see with WWE in the last few years. Like, there's been Logan Paul, there's Bad Bunny that they've had wrestle a couple of times.
Yeah.
My goodness, that man is insane. Like, they did a show in Puerto Rico, his home country. And when he came out to one of his songs, like his song was his theme song.
Yeah.
It was a concert. The entire crowd just sing along. It was so epic. And like, but he also, like, I forgot if it was, I think it was him. He moved down to Florida to be, because they have like a performance center in Florida, the WWE. Yeah. He moved down there and he would train like almost every day to get good at wrestling. Like he committed. And so did Logan Paul. He commits. I think he has like a ring in his, you know, backyard or whatever. Like these guys have committed to the craft. So again, I have to give them respect, even though I really don't like giving Logan Paul any respect, but.
Yeah, no, I totally, totally feel you. Natasha, did you know Logan Paul was a wrestler?
I had no idea. I knew him as like the annoying influencer. Like, that's pretty much all I knew about him. He tried proposing recently, did he not?
I believe so. I think that was a while ago, though. It was definitely a while ago because somebody was talking about his girl. That's why I know. Boxer, influencer, he's doing it all. And I hate the fact that he's doing it well, but he is, so I can't hate.
Wait, are WWE, like I thought it was all fake. Are they now like actual?
No, like, so fighting? It's scripted, but like the moves do hurt. They're like, when you're getting slapped across the chest, you're getting slapped across the chest. That's not fake. Yeah. You're getting hit with a chair. You're getting hit with a chair. You're going through a table. You're going through a table. Like that stuff isn't fake, but it's like planned. It's like, hey, I'm going to do this to you now. I'm going to do that to you now. This is the plan. And you know, sometimes the things like tables and stuff are probably not as sturdy as like
the gimmick
table. Like, they're not like a dinner table, right? They're like a little bit more weaker.
And they're not using like their full strength. Like they're just gonna be like.
So the art of professional wrestling, the best way I can put it is they do their best to not hurt the other person while making it look as real as possible. And I think that's such a fascinating premise, you know, because like but a lot of the times also people will like, they don't pull punches or slaps. Like there's this one guy, his name is Gunther. He's like 6'7".
Oh my God.
He's like 260 pounds. He is known for chopping you. He takes his hand and swings it on your chest and he leaves people red all the time, like ripped up, skin torn, because he doesn't hold back. And like the sound, oh my God, it's like a gunshot. It's just wild.
But even the people that are pulling punches, like getting a pulled punch from a wrestler, it's like getting a full force punch from a regular person. So these people have to be able to withstand some type of punishment, right? It's like they'll punch you or kick you in the head. And it's not a kick in the head at full speed, but like it still hurts like a normal person who doesn't know how to punches you.
You need stamina, endurance, cardio, agility. Like there's a lot of like physical, you know, prowess that you do need to perform.
Exactly. The next match was Roman Reigns, RKO. Who is the other guy?
LA Knight.
LA Knight.
And AJ Styles.
I don't know LA Knight and AJ Styles that much. I do know Roman Reigns because I know he's related to The Rock. And I did know RKO because that finishing move is like awesome. Hat comes out of nowhere. It's super dope. I've seen him fight live in a Hell in a Cell match with John Cena. Which was cool. So that was really, really fun. That match was okay. I was like, it was a good match. I can't complain. But I thought some of the other matches were a lot more,
The thing was, everybody knew Reigns was going to win. At least every wrestling fan knew Reigns was going to win. He's been holding that title for 3 years now, 3.5 years.
Yeah.
And he wasn't going to lose it here. If he's going to lose, it's going to be at WrestleMania, probably, hopefully. I beg for them to make that change, but so that's the other thing, is just like no one cared, and like it's just very standard Roman Reigns. He has his family and they just always help him out, and then it's fun stuff. So
so speaking of him not losing his title until WrestleMania, so like when the Rumble started, they kept pushing a promo of Cody Rhodes, and it kind of made it look obvious that Cody Rhodes was going to win, and he did, and that's why I was like, okay, this is a little predictable. I'm pretty sure he's going to win here.
Yeah, sometimes they are predictable, you know, but sometimes they want to focus on whatever story they want to tell versus like trying to be unpredictable. I mean, it became pretty obvious when they kept announcing or kept reinforcing how if he wins, he'll be the first man in like 26 years to win back-to-back Rumbles.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, they're not going to like give up this opportunity to have this cool stat, you know?
Yeah.
So it was, I genuinely thought CM Punk was going to win until last night, but because his story is a whole other thing.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge CM Punk fan. He's my favorite wrestler. So I really thought after coming back 10 years later, it was just like a nice fairy tale, like storybook ending. He left the company 10 years ago. He left the Royal Rumble. He quit the company, Royal Rumble 2014. He comes back and he's here for Royal Rumble 2024. It's just like a perfect 10 years story. Like, okay, yeah. He's back. He wins and he main events WrestleMania, which is something he's always wanted to do. So I thought like, oh, okay. But you know, they went with the Cody story, which is fine too. I'm a big Cody Rhodes fan as well.
Yeah, I like Cody Rhodes because, like, again, like, I've been out of the wrestling game for a while, so I really like legacy characters or legacy heroes, because his dad was Dusty Rhodes, very popular wrestler. His brother is Goldust, very popular wrestler. So I know them. And then I think there were a few other wrestlers that had legacy characters. I think, like, one of them is related to Scott Steiner, a few others. But usually in the Royal Rumble, they would bring out, like, old wrestlers and surprise you. I'm surprised we didn't see that, because Edge came out a few years ago and like a bunch of other people came out. It's cool to see that. And like, as someone who hasn't watched wrestling in a while, I would have really liked that, but they didn't do a lot of that this year.
Yeah. I mean, they just have a really strong roster right now where it's like giving it to a legend or, you know, someone, it's not a waste, but you have to really pick and choose in that case. There's even a lot of guys that are current, like, full-time wrestlers that weren't in the match either. Like, there's a lot that they left out because they have so many, like, top-tier talent. Sami Zayn was another guy that, like, I didn't know if we were going to see him because he's actually been off TV for a couple of weeks. But him, Punk, Drew McIntyre, Cody Rhodes, like, these are all guys that, Jey Uso, all guys that have been, like, in the main event scene for the last few months. Yeah. So they just, like, already had enough guys to fill the ring that they didn't need to bring anybody back.
Cool. I mean, that makes sense. That makes sense to me, man. It's cool. I think I'm going to slowly start getting back into wrestling now that I know that I already have Peacock and I can watch all these things. Also, I think Netflix just bought the rights to WWE Raw, which is cool.
That's in 2025, though. So
okay. Well, yeah. I feel like I can slowly start getting into wrestling now because it was live for a while and I wasn't able to watch it. But now I think I'm going to do it. And a lot of sports are going that streaming service area. It's just really, really interesting.
To. It's cable 2.0. Like, that's
it's like, oh, you're a streaming service and you're doing live sports. You're basically cable now. We just came full circle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think about, like, I don't know about any of y'all, but I don't tend to use a lot of my streaming apps unless there's something like a new show comes out, right?
Yeah.
So it makes sense why getting like live weekly programming is the goal, because otherwise people eventually start being like, well, I don't use this, so I'm just going to cancel my subscription. So if they have, and like, it's great for WWE because that's like, most people have cut cable, so they're not watching WWE on a weekly basis. I don't even watch it on a weekly basis. But if it's on Netflix, I'll usually throw it on in the background. I have Netflix.
And there's ads coming to all these streaming services too. So
it's really cable. It's literally cable.
It's cable. All right.
Except worse interface, because instead of like one central place, find all your channels, you have to switch between 10 different apps. Like,
that is true. That is
it's worse cable.
Oh, all right. Well, speaking of, going back to basics, I want to definitely thank everybody for coming on the show. This was really cool. We got to talk about so much cool current events. I'm really excited for Natasha's show. So that's going to be super exciting. Nov, before you go, can you let people know where they can find you?
Sure. Thank you for having me. You can find me on Instagram and TikTok and Threads, I guess, as well, at Nov the Poet.
Awesome. People use Threads.
I sometimes do. I mostly just repost stuff there, right? Like, it's separate, so I just, whatever video or content I have, I just post it there as well. I'm like, whatever happens to it, happens to it. I don't care.
Fair. And Natasha, one more time, let people know where they can find your show and find you.
Yeah, so you can find the show on YouTube, and we'll have the clips and trailers and interesting moments on Instagram, and then you can find me on Instagram as well, and the handles are right there, and so you can take a look.
Awesome, great. Well, thank you guys for joining us, and until next time, guys, Salam Nerds.
Peace.